You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Neil Williams, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron along with Neil Williams. Neil.
What's going on?
Another week.
The intro music gets me in a totally different mood now.
Yeah.
In a good way.
It definitely kind of gets you ready.
Get your blood flowing.
For a good show.
Exciting topic today.
Exactly. Yes. You know, today's topic's near and dear, man. I'll God, I got so many stories to tell. I'm sure you do too. But back in 1984, I helped open a charter addiction hospital in Austin, Texas.
That's OG, man. That's Betty Ford OG.
That's OG. And I was the assistant detox manager.
Jeez.
I was a glorified nurse's aide, kind of, you know. But anyway, we'd sit in these groups, and lo and behold, when you take away the addict or alcoholic's drug of choice, they quickly become enamored with somebody, a fellow client, a fellow patient, and they just get so lost in lust that now they can't even think about their own treatment. They've just fallen in love with this other person and group.
We should be clear. Our topic today is relationships, but not just relationships. Relationships in recovery.
In recovery.
Or something similar to recovery.
So we have that. We have the 13th step. We have...
Not everybody knows about the 13th step.
We have people who will quickly get into a relationship 30, 60 days clean and find themselves in a position where their recovery might get derailed. Relationships and recovery, it's a big thing, and we want to talk about some parameters today and see where the discussion flows from there.
First question.
Yes.
Is it a bad idea to date while early in recovery? Not just, well, okay, let's separate it. Because you can't just say, is it a bad idea to date in recovery? Because recovery is a lifestyle and it's supposed to be long term. So I still say I'm in recovery. And it's been several years since I started, since I entered recovery. But early recovery is totally different when we're talking about relationships. So is it a bad idea to date while early in recovery? Bruce, I want to hear your response to that question first.
Yeah, yes, it is a bad idea to date while early in recovery. You don't need anything to distract you from your recovery. And I know that folks will say that this person is going to help me. This person is a value add to my recovery. This person helps me with my recovery. But a piece of your soul is invested in this other, or dating, and you're not developing thoroughly. You're not developing completely. Look, I know this is easier said than done. I'm not the dating police. I'm just saying, you know, it's bad enough for the people who are already married or already in a long-term relationship and get recovery and then return to those already existing relationships, much less to be kind of dating and trying to find somebody new. Excuse me. Your thought.
I agree. But to be clear, I agree 100%. To that, is it a bad idea to date while early in recovery? Yes, especially if it's a new relationship. If it's a new relationship, early in recovery, it plain and simple, it's just not worth the risk. There's too many risks involved for me to say it's not a bad idea. It's a very, very risky decision. Now, you also have the folks who, like you mentioned, come into recovery in an existing relationship, and those come in all different shapes, sizes, and colors, because you have marriages that are failing and you absolutely have to, this person must go in recovery to salvage what's left of his family. And then you have couples who are both in addiction and only one of them goes, or both, you know. So relationships are, we all know what kind of toll they take on our emotions. It's nothing to be casual about. And I really, that's a fun one. When I have a sponsee who says that they're starting to talk to the opposite sex, and I say, well, hold on, you know, this is, and like, no, don't worry about it. It's just casual. It's even worse, dude. I mean, I don't know if it's worse, but.
How about a sponsee that takes you an hour south of a country town to go to the mall, only to go into another high-risk situation where the sponsee's been fleeced by jewelry store personnel to buy stupid chains and whatever. Anyway, that's a double-double.
Yeah.
Purely hypothetical.
That's how I was going to say, you just pulled that out of the air, didn't you? Surely you did. It's pretty good.
Yeah, let's just say, for example. But only dating, we're just talking, we're just going to spend some time together. And how do you negotiate that in the sponsee, you know?
I have a couple of problems that, because when this happens, being a sponsor, I get asked this question a lot. And really just being someone who friends know my lifestyle, they ask me this question. And the two things that I worry about the most are an individual making this new person their higher power. Ooh. And now, if anything were to happen, if you're reliant and you're becoming codependent, and now I'm relying on this human being, keyword, this is a human. Now I'm relying on them to keep me sane and stable, when before I had this spiritual program that I was focused on, and it's very, very much a firm foundation to build upon. And now I've shifted over to a human who I've not known for very long. The other thing is, the other part of it is, a lot of us, in fact, I'd say majority of us who are coming into recovery, have some really, really bad habits when it comes to relationships. And part of the steps in working, again, I'm talking about 12-step program, but part of recovery is ironing those things out and addressing those issues of how we're treating other people. And you haven't done that yet. So you're already going back to a situation that you're supposed to be cleaning up your behavior with. And you haven't even gotten there yet.
It's like going back to the scene of the crime almost.
Yeah. Or if you see a football team play a really poor game, and instead of going back to practice, they just go right into another game. It's like, God, you need to go back to the drawing board.
Go back, look at the game film.
Yeah. And see why that other team just destroyed you. Exactly. You know, those are the biggest things for me. Because I think, and I've had my heart broken in recovery, and that, man, for anyone who's used to what I did, was I dealt with every situation in life by getting inebriated. Like, it didn't matter what high pressure situation, or whether it was a loss or a gain. You gain, you celebrate with drugs and alcohol. You lose, you deal with it with drugs and alcohol. And to have to handle, anyone who's ever had their heart broken knows how difficult it is. It's hard. And I don't know that I can compare it to any other type of pain. It's just different. And to learn to do that by yourself for the first time without drugs and alcohol is, it'll take a toll, man. It'll change you, you know? So if you're early in recovery, the chances of you making through that, if that happens, pretty slim. So that's what I think about.
Very slim. So when is it okay to date again?
You want me to answer first?
Yeah.
It's a case-by-case basis.
Correct. Depends on the person. Correct.
Yeah,
there's a year rule that a lot of people, it's just one of those things that's been thrown around for so long. I don't do that. A year? What? First, I don't run your life. As a sponsor, I don't get to tell you what to do. I can give you some very some suggestions that I've done a lot of research on and seen a lot of people go through, but it's different for everybody, especially if you're going through a divorce while you come into recovery, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I can date again, you know, I've got my stuff together. You're still in the middle of a divorce, and that's not a good idea, man. And the other thing is, there's more to it than just you. Who is you? You know what they say about some people, your picker's broken.
Right.
And I don't think that a lot of us have the healthiest idea about how to choose someone to be in a relationship with, sober or not. I think a lot of us could clean that process up a little bit, you know, especially if you've been finding all your significant others in the bar. Like, well, how are you going about choosing this next one or finding that next person to talk with and see if you, so when is it? I think it's a case by case basis for sure, but it's definitely after you work the steps. If you're in a 12 step program,
I made smart goals or something.
Hey, if you use that system, there's no way you'll make it till the end of it and say it's still a good idea.
Because you always make bad choices, regardless of where you are. Not bad, but, you know, flawed choices. But, yeah, I mean, you don't want to go back to the scene of the crime. You know, your part of your morals, values, and beliefs need to change. I would think looking at the next partner. You know, you had a certain set of morals, values, and beliefs when you're using, and that's going to shape your sexual history and relational history. Well, now that you're in recovery, you really want to make sure that you've got new things on board to grow in that mm-hmm. sphere. So. You know, the old thing about, well, how old were you when you started using? I was 13 years old. So you're emotional 13 years old. So let's say if that's true, then you got all these 13, 14-year-olds, you know, trying to date when they're in their 20s or 30s or whatever. And
yeah.
So they need that time to mature or get down the road a bit emotionally before they start dating or getting relationships. Yeah.
You know what else I just thought of? I remember when I was getting back into the dating scene, and my brother, who's married and has kids, and at this time was married and had kids, he was so excited to create me an online dating profile. And I remember he was making this Tinder profile, and I'm sitting there just like, dude, I don't know about this. And his wife was laughing at him because he was so excited, because he had long since been done dating, you know. So
you got some vicarious pleasure.
Oh, he was swiping people before I even saw it. I was like, what are you doing, man? This is my life. But I remember wondering what I'm gonna do. Like, what am I gonna invite this person to do? I can't go out and drink. I can't invite them to go out to bars or clubs. I was in a legal situation where I wasn't allowed to go to those places. And so I didn't know what I was going to do. And so if I'm that person, I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to act in a social environment. Why would I compound that problem by also learning how to talk to the opposite sex again, or whatever sex that is I'm interested in? Like, why would I make it harder? Because I don't even know how to act in public or where to go yet. And yet now I'm thinking I should also jump into the dating scene simultaneously, asking for problems.
So what happened? Did you get on Tinder, or what's the rest of the story, man?
Yeah. Okay. I'm glad you asked, because this actually opens up. I've been catfished twice. And when I say I've been catfished, I mean, when we met in person, they did not look at all like what they looked like in the photos. In fact, one of the times I asked them twice if their name was actually this, because I was like, there's no way. There's no way. And you also learn, you just learn that certain dating sites are for certain
types of
behavior. Yeah. So I steered clear of. Nowadays there's like Bumble, Tinder, there's even one called Grindr, I think. Yeah. And then there's Hinge. Yeah. Those are the only ones I can think of.
Talkify. But
what is it?
Talkify is another one that's out now. It's whatever.
Talkify.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Tinder, apparently, from what I learned, it was more for the just hooking up casual stuff. And then like Bumble and Hinge, those are more of like if you're trying to meet someone. And they've actually come a long way, because I met some really cool people doing that stuff. But again, while we're talking about this, for ladies, especially ladies who are petite, you got to be real careful with this stuff too. It's not the safest thing in the world to just meet people. I just feel like I had to say that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because I really do feel that way.
It's pretty rough out there, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, getting back to your point, you know, where you couldn't go to bars, you're in the middle of a legal situation, like,
yeah.
Well, is it better to date somebody who's in recovery?
I said I never will. I said I never would, and I decided I never will. Because I am a handful, and I think I am extremely difficult to be with and love. So just knowing that, I don't want another me. And I decided that I would not enter a relationship with someone with the same problems that I have. I'm more than happy to take on some other stuff, just not this. But wow. My sponsor and his wife have been together decades. They're both in the program. And two of my closest friends who I met through the program, they are now married and have their second child on the way. Sweetest people in the world. Love them to death. They're perfect for each other. So, but early in recovery, no. Bad idea.
What about ever? Ever, it's okay. Like if it's years and years down the road.
Yeah. Here's what matters. Are they working a program?
Right.
And are they okay without you? They need to be okay without you. And I did that even when I was meeting people. I decided I was only going to be in a committed relationship with someone who was okay, whether I'm there or not.
That's a good criteria, man.
It makes a huge difference when you start thinking about it.
Yeah, I always talk about being equally yoked in different respects. And yeah. Man, that's so true. And that's something that, you know, like you said, if you're both in recovery, that's a whole lot to handle. And then not only is that person okay without you, but does that person need you to maintain their recovery?
Yeah. I've seen some couples, one relapse, the other one follow. I've seen the healthy ones where one relapsed and the other got them back into the program. Actually, it took more than a couple tries, but they eventually got back in it, and now they're in a really good place. So, but you have to be ready for that, man. And because also, what does that say about you if your girlfriend, boyfriend, wife, or husband relapses and, you know, you're not willing to go through it with them? So you have to be prepared for that type of scenario. Did I lose you?
Yep. You certainly do. It looks like my bandwidth is running down over here. But hopefully the audio is still going good.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Well, what about dating your sponsor?
I almost put this question just for fun. It's a terrible idea. And if you ask someone to be your sponsor and they're also willing to date you, they shouldn't be your sponsor. They shouldn't be your sponsor in the first place.
For sure.
What do you think about that?
I agree. That's just the epitome of a dual role relationship. A lot of times, you know, as a professional, you can't, you know, a psychiatrist theoretically can't be married to their patient, you know. It's just, there's this kind of responsibility, I think, when you're somebody's sponsor that transcends, right, the flesh. And so, you know, it's just better to have a clean boundary between where I end and you begin. So it's where, mm-hmm. where I end as a sponsee and the other person, where I end as a sponsee and the other person begins as a sponsor. And just it just makes it for a better relationship. You know, sometimes healthy fences make healthy neighbors. And this is one of them.
Yeah, and this also goes back to when we were talking about sponsorship a couple of weeks ago. Part of why you don't want to have a sponsor who's the opposite sex, or as a sponsor, you don't want to sponsor someone who's the opposite sex, because it opens the door for stuff like this. And then people will say, oh, well, it's not my fault. We're just meant for each other. And it's, you know, we didn't plan this. And we're just meant to be. Of course you're meant to be. We all are in the first 2 weeks. We're all meant to be together in the first 2 weeks, you know? But, yeah, you're not going to be doing it for the right reasons. And what if you remember, so think about a relationship you've had where it ended poorly. And so where I found out, someone I had been in a relationship with had lied to me multiple times about some stuff. Then I started to wonder if all the other things they told me were true. What does that say about the program if your sponsor turns out to be a liar? Then I'm going to be thinking about all these spiritual conversations we had. I'm going to be thinking about all the stuff about the steps and recovery. And now is that all a lie too? Man, what a whirlwind to put yourself through.
Great point.
I think these are things that simply I wouldn't know had I not seen them. And they make a lot more sense when you see how it can happen. Like, that's just not something that you're going to be thinking about.
Right.
God willing, they don't screw you over, but what if they do? You know, what if they do?
Exactly. Now, I like this next one. Can my boyfriend or girlfriend be my sponsor? Now, it's pretty interesting. I've seen this happen a lot where the person that's using or new to recovery will say, already their partner was already in recovery. And out of convenience, Right. They already know the person. They already know my whereabouts. I'm already accountable to them in the context of the relationship. So why don't I just kind of pencil whip them into being my sponsor?
Yeah.
We can go to meetings together. We can take the same car. Share the same clothing. Whatever.
Yeah, but.
No, I know it's a no-go. Yeah, it's a bad idea. But it happens.
Well, but there's more to it, because if that's the only person available to help you, yeah. And if you're the boyfriend and your girlfriend decides they want to get clean, then help them. Absolutely. Take them through the first couple steps. Step four is all about resentments, and you do the house cleaning. You take your inventory. You talk about character defects. 8 and 9 is making amends and talking about all the wrongs you did. It's probably not healthy to be that honest with your significant other, which sounds weird to say because we always talk about transparency in your relationships and honesty. But well, I'll give a personal example. 2 days ago, I was talking to my girlfriend and I said something alluding to, just because I think something or feel something doesn't mean I always need to share it with you, because it might cause harm to me or somebody else, and it might not be necessary to share. It might be something I'm just going through and I need to process it. And that happens all the time. And she told me that she didn't know that before. She used to think that everything she felt, thought, or anything, she needed to communicate to me because we were trying to be transparent and honest and open with each other. But I truly believe that that's not always the case. I think some things, thoughts and feelings and anxieties I have don't always need to be shared.
That's right.
And so the program, it's rigorous honesty. And so that's why a sponsor is so healthy, because it's a neutral individual and you're able to do those things thoroughly and not have any what's the word, nothing holding you back, you know, no restrictions to that,
right? Or if you're recovering a different way and you have a recovery coach that feels, you know, a sober coach or a recovery coach that fills a similar role ish as a sponsor, even though coaching is different, but definitely want to throw that in there.
Yeah. When, and that's, even though it's different, it's still that safe place and the voice of reason, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Speaking of, can the sponsor tell their sponsee if they can date or not? Or if they're ready to date. I don't know how you want to look at that.
Yeah. It happens two different ways. There are sponsors who tell their sponsees when they can date. I see it all the time. They also tell them when they're allowed to share in a meeting. I've never done that. I don't feel like that's my place, because if you do things like that, I feel like you border this. Your sponsor's now your higher power. Like, as a sponsor, my role is to get you connected. I play middleman, right? I show you how I did it. And I also introduce you to the source of where I get my peace and direction and all that stuff. And for me, that comes from God. So I need to escort you or, you know, show you how to meet that. But as far as me running your life, that's alcoholics and addicts. A lot of us are control freaks. So it's no coincidence to me that you have sponsors trying to control people. And it's no coincidence to me that you have some meetings where there's one person who seems to run everything. There's one person who seems to call all the shots and make all the rules. This is not how the program's designed.
Right.
It's designed differently for a very good reason, and that right there is it. So no, I don't think, but I think you should discuss those things with your sponsor, because they're going to remind you, hey, it's really early. They're going to remind you, like we talked about, hey, let's focus on the steps. Let's make sure your focus is where it needs to be. Because if someone that I'm sponsoring decides they're going to discuss that with me and I advise against it, and they go start seeing that person, they stop working the steps, I'm probably going to tell them to find another sponsor, because they've stopped doing the work and they're more worried about this new thing. So I don't want to work with someone who doesn't care enough.
Yeah. Well, what'd you say last week? You're working with somebody. There's that point where they actually listen.
Yeah. There is a point where they start to realize that I'm not trying to tell them what to do. I'm trying to save them heartache and time, like so many others did before me. You know, they weren't trying to boss me around. They were trying to save me some trouble. And boy, did they ever. And so when they start listening, you see that they're, I don't know, it's like you finally met in the middle and you can now move forward. But you have to see that they have skin in the game.
Right. Right. So it is a balance, you know, working with folks. Because if you were a recovery coach or a life coach, and this question came up about should I date or not, coach, you would say, well, you'd ask a lot of questions, right? Do you think you're ready? What are the pros? What are the cons? What are the risks, right? You'd go through this whole litany of coachy sounding stuff. But I think some of these more decisive sponsors wouldn't look like that.
Yeah.
They're only as good as the person on the other side of the table. So make no mistake about it. But that is always an interesting reference point to me, because it's like, okay, we're helping these people in recovery, but you know, it's like there's this assumption that the person's kind of a dumbass and they can't make their own decisions for a year or two.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's not necessarily a good way to treat people.
No, and just like you were talking about with coaching, when someone brings that up, I want them to tell me, how does that play a role in the things we're working on? Like, so you said you're ready, because if I'm asked, we'll say hypothetically, they say they're ready. You know, do you think you're ready for that? Yes, I do. Okay, tell me why. And tell me how this is going to work with our plan. Because we already have a plan. We're already moving. And you just throw someone in the back seat. Like, I'm sorry, that sounds kind of bad. Obviously, it just grabs them up, throw them in the back seat. But now we have another person along for the ride. So how do they fit? And how is this going to be a positive thing? And yeah, you're right. You make them sell you on it, really. Yeah, it's like court. You know, make me agree with you.
Right. Right. So another situation is, if you're in recovery and your boyfriend or girlfriend is still using, should you leave that relationship?
Well, we can do this one of two ways. Let's say, okay, if you're both in recovery, I'm thinking of all the different scenarios.
Well,
are we talking about now? Are we talking about a couple where they're both in recovery? Are we talking about
that? We'll save that one for last.
Okay.
For the next one. If I get sober and my significant other starts using, or they're still using and they won't stop using, should I get out of that relationship?
Yes, if they won't stop using. Because how are you going to get away from it? And you can say they'll change, they'll change, they'll change. Yeah, but I mean, if I keep going to the dope house, eventually I'm going to do some dope.
Let me throw a wrench. What if you're married? What if it's a nice Christian couple? Oops, yeah. I'm supposed to leave.
Yeah, that's hard too, because there's no one answer to this either. It's a tough one. Because like I told you, I know some people very close to me, and I watched their marriages go through this. And one was helping the other get into treatment four, if not five times. And I was, you know, right alongside this person through the whole deal, and it was not fun to watch. And they were not having fun going through it. But and it's a beautiful thing that they were, because now things are pretty awesome for that couple. But if you're not married, I would go.
Good answer.
I would. Now, what would you do?
Same thing. If there's not a right or wrong answer per se, but yeah, if I was not married to that individual, I would be thinking pretty quickly about exiting the relationship, particularly if my own survival, you know, if it's going to be me and my own survival, even though the big enemy is myself and not necessarily this person I'm with, yeah, I would lean on surviving. And look, I know every case is different. There's not a cookie cutter thing, but there's, like you said, there's different types of relationships. Now, look, if somebody lapses and they get back up on the bus or whatever, and that's fine. But if they relapse and they say, nope, I'm going to stay in the using world, then that's, you know, that's a whole different ball game. But oftentimes we see the person who kind of gaslights or bullshits the other person. Well, I'm going to get back up on the bus, and I'm just for a little while, and then it never happens, or the person gets strung along or whatever. And that's another show for sure.
Well, I think talking about if you're in a relationship and you are both clean and one relapses, and, you know, see if you can get them back in, if they won't, and that's just got to be what it is. But also, if you're in a relationship where you're both using and you decide you're going to get clean and you go and do this and you come back, the other individual is still using, you know, you should probably set at least somewhat of a timeline for, hey, I'm going to try and see if this person wants to join me in this. But if they won't, you have to ask yourself, how long are you going to let that hold you back? Because now you've crossed over into this new life. And, you know, the opportunities are there, and there's this whole new future. You've got to decide if you're going to, you know, abandon that to stay behind and hope that you can help this person. So I think you have to be realistic with yourself and decide how long you're going to try and do that before you just have to move forward.
Right.
Without.
I agree. Setting a deadline, setting some structure within that, so you just don't get lost and just swept away in the other person's addiction. Or when some of those things linger, it just gets you closer to using again. You know, so yeah, definitely hard decisions. You know, it's a case by case basis. There's no cookie cutter decision, but it is something that we see that. I see that a lot with my clients that are sex addicts, and then they'll see the wife will see a therapist, like, you got to leave this guy. He's a sex addict, this and that. You know what I mean? Some of these guys are actually making the changes, and yet they've been kind of vilified for their past, you know? So I've spent a lot of time telling wives, wait a minute, hold on a minute. He's making gains in treatment. If you need us to do a polygraph to substantiate some changes, that the person is turning north or has turned north for a particular amount of time. Anyway, but that's the sex addiction world is a little bit different than the substance use world for sure.
Yeah.
Because that is a, you know, so that's a whole different level of betrayal and all that. What should I do if my boyfriend, girlfriend is in recovery and they relapse? Should I leave?
You know, I don't think you should just up and leave now if there's more to it than that.
Sure.
But there's also, you know, there's ways to try and help them first. I guess it really depends on how long that relationship's been a relationship. You know, how serious is it? If I have been dating someone for like 3 months, I'm fixing to bail. You consider yourself lucky you dodged a bullet. You find out that soon.
Yeah, and what kind of program of recovery was that person in? That person have their own sponsor? Was that person working the steps to some degree? Were they doing other prayer or service work or other parts of a program? Were they actually doing those things? So, you know, it's and that's why it brings us back to that earlier question about it's probably a good idea for you to not be the sponsee of your spouse or significant other, what have you, because of this. Because then if they fail, that means you failed. Not only you failed as their sponsor, because now they're relapsing and I had so much faith in you.
Yeah. Yeah, this is true. I think, but there's also, I've met some folks who, I met a couple guys when I was working at that treatment center, out in West Texas. I met a couple guys who came into treatment because their wives had found treatment for them. Like they had actually gotten them into the program and gotten them to seek help. And so those are different. You know, when you have a relationship where you've been with someone for a long time, you have children together, and you then later find out that you've developed a drinking problem, then, you know, I think it can be a great thing because, you know, and we have a good friend of ours who talks about how his wife changed his life in the way that she supported him and encouraged him. So, you know, sometimes they can be that one voice of hope and they can be that one person who you listen to. But other times, that person needs to spare themselves the misery that's coming because it can get pretty ugly too. So again, this is where coaching comes in really handy. And I think families and wives and husbands of addicts and alcoholics should always consider the coaching avenue because they can kind of give you some insight that you're unable to see. You know, am I enabling this person? Am I actually helping them, or am I helping them continue to use and drink? Because it can go either way.
It's a whole big avenue, a whole big thing of values clarification, your morals, values, and beliefs. So, you know, your values about your recovery, you know, the cornerstones of your recovery. And then talking about relationships. And so if the recovery, all relationships in a person's recovery intersect, okay, so that's a given.
Yeah.
We just don't want a dual role with the other person. Okay. Right. So what's acceptable in the relationship? Okay. What's acceptable for your recovery? What's not acceptable for your recovery? Here we go. There'll be things in that relationship that'll cross over that might not be acceptable for the recovery. Hmm. This could be with a non-using partner. You know, the person in recovery has a non-using partner. So, as coaches or even sponsors, we would help do some values clarification work to set up those boundaries, because it's the relationship, man, that sneaks up on people a lot of times, man. It's the relationship. The person is also a love addict or a sex addict or has some childhood trauma that has yet to be worked through, because all they're trying to do is stay clean. And so all the anger and other wounds that have happened, they're still fresh. As a matter of fact, when the person gets clean, it rips the Band-Aid off.
Right.
And now there's all this work that has to be done. Well, shit, if I hadn't gotten sober, I wouldn't have to do all this primary process work or family of origin work or trauma work or, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
You know what this got me thinking about? Earlier when you asked me about Ed, or when we went over the question, where is it? Is it a bad idea to date someone who is in recovery also? And I said no, because that was my personal choice. Then you have the other end. Now that means I have to go date normal people. Normal people may drink or use something recreationally. So then begs the question, is it healthy for me to be in a relationship with someone who uses the very things I have to stay away from? Right.
And that's that value certification. Is that acceptable in your recovery?
Right.
Is that a risk? Right. Is that something you want to take on? Right.
Yeah. And for me, when I started, because again, I chose to date outside the program, I had to really think about when they say they're going out with their friends and I'm sitting there and I'm going to judge them and be like, how much are you going to have to drink? Who's driving? You know, do I turn into dad mode? It's so, there's so many things that people are not thinking about, which is why the first question, is it a bad idea to date while early in recovery? The answer is yes, but everybody's different. Fortunately for me, my girlfriend does not drink very much and she's just a healthy person. So it works out wonderfully, but you got to be prepared for that too.
Well, man, that's a wrap. It takes us into the home stretch right there. Good discussion today about relationships and some of the parameters and boundaries of relationships in recovery and dating sponsors and those types of things, and trying to avoid some of these pitfalls and disasters and have an open and frank discussion about them early on. Yeah. Particularly in the first year of recovery and beyond for many. Well, Neil, how can folks find us and what are some of the social media contact points?
For Instagram, we are on under Concierge_Coaches. And on Facebook, I believe it's Concierge Coaches Show. I am at ElevatedLifestyleAcademy.com and Elevated Lifestyle Academy on all social platforms. Bruce, where are you?
ConcierceCoach.net. Find me there, as well as the other sites Neil just said. Well, folks, thanks for listening and tuning in today on the Concierge Coaches Show. We'll see you here next week, same time. We'll have another exciting topic and or possible guest, and we'll keep covering coaching material for you. So until then, oh, by the way, see us on Apple Podcasts too. If you might have said that already, but check us on Apple Podcasts as well. Okay, everybody, we'll take care. We'll see you next week on the Concierge Coaches Show. Have a good week, everybody. Stay safe.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Neil Williams, only on LA Talk Radio.